Now, we left off last week with the incident that occurred at the Tower of Babel. This week, we're going to take up another one of the mighty acts of God. And we'll begin in Genesis, the 13th chapter. We're going to cover Abraham and the incidents in his life at a later time. Right now, we want to deal with the subject of Sodom and Gomorrah. We recall that God called Abraham and brought him out of Mesopotamia, and he settled in Canaan, or the Holy Land, along with his nephew Lot. So we read here in Genesis, the 13th chapter, verse 12, Abraham dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent toward Sodom. Now, it must have been very green and verdant and very beautiful in that area at that time. Otherwise, Lot surely would not have pitched there with his herds adjacent to Sodom. But we notice in verse 13 a statement here. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners exceeding, and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. Now, how can we be guilty of sin if there is no law? Remember what we read in Romans 5:13? Where there is no law, there is no transgression. So it's quite obvious here that God's law was in effect, and it was in effect against the very thing these men of Sodom and Gomorrah were doing. Or maybe we should say these people. Now we can skip over here now to the 18th chapter. And let's begin here in verse 18. Remember, Abram at this time now, as he's called, is camped in the plains of Mamre. He sat in his tent during the heat of the day. This is Genesis 18 and verse 2. And he lift up his eyes, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door and bowed himself to the ground. Now, from the account here, we know that this is referring to the one who became Jesus Christ, the God of the Old Testament, and two angels. Now, we read here that God says that he felt incumbent to reveal to Abram what he was going to do, to Abraham, as we read here. Because now his name is Abraham. We read in verse 16, the men rose up from thence and looked toward Sodom. And Abraham went with them to bring them on the way. And the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham the thing which I do? So the Lord felt incumbent to reveal to Abraham what was going to take place here. No doubt, I'm sure, for Lot's sake. For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment. So Abraham was a righteous man, as the Bible says, and he would continue to do God's will, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him. That is, to fulfill all the promises that he had made. The Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous. So he's now revealed to Abraham what his concern was. Now I should explain that from all the archaeological evidence that is extant today, it is believed. Because at this time there was what was called a Pentapolis. That is, there were five cities that were within reasonably close proximity in the area of now the present Dead Sea. And it is believed that when this destruction occurred, the land sunk and that entire area filled up with salt water because of the various chemicals and minerals that are in that area, and that the cities actually lie at the bottom of the Dead Sea to this day. It was not only Sodom and Gomorrah, but it was Adma and Zeboiim, and then there was one other city, which I don't recall the name right at this time. That last city was not destroyed, however. I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it which has come unto me, and if not, I will know. And the men turned their faces from thence and went toward Sodom, but Abraham stood yet before the Lord. Now, I won't go through this entire dissertation here, because you see, Abraham really didn't know how far God was willing to go to extend his mercy. So he gave the figure, first of all, of 50, because he said, "Will you destroy the righteous with the wicked?" in verse 23. Of course not. God is not going to destroy the righteous with the wicked. "Peradventure there be 50 righteous within the city. Wilt thou also destroy and spare not the place for the 50 righteous that are therein? That be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked. That be far from thee. Shall not the judge of the earth do right?" And the Lord said, "If I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes." Abraham started with 50, and if you go down the line here, it went from 50 to 45 to 40 to 30 to 20 and to 10. When he got down to the 10, he said, "Oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet this once. Peradventure 10 shall be found there." This is verse 32. And he said, "I will not destroy it for 10's sake." So had there even been 10 righteous people in that area there, they would have been spared. You know what that proves? There weren't even 10 righteous people. "And there came two angels to Sodom at even." So it was just beginning to get dusk. "And Lot sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them." Now, we don't exactly know why he was sitting in the gate, unless he was some kind of an official, because if you remember the statement later on, they were upset because they said, "This man comes to judge us." So he could have been an official. We do not know, but for whatever the reason, he was seated at the entrance of the gate, and seeing them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, "Behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray thee, unto your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and you shall rise up early and go on your ways." And they said, "Nay, but we will abide in the streets at night." And he pressed upon them greatly. Why? He knew what was in that city. We'll see a comment a little bit later on. In spite of Lot's faults, God viewed him as a righteous man. He pressed upon them greatly, and they turned in unto him, and entered into his house. Now, it isn't likely at that point that Lot understood they were angels. It didn't take him long to find out, however. "And he made them a feast, and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat." So angels can eat, just like Christ ate after he was resurrected. He didn't have to, nor do angels. "But before they lay down," so before they could recline or go to sleep, "the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round about, both old and young, all the people from every quarter." This shows you what this city had become and what these people had degenerated into. "And they called unto Lot and said unto him, Where are the men which came unto thee this night? Bring them out unto us that we may know them." Now, what do you suppose they wanted to do? Shake their hands and get acquainted with them? That is the same word that is used where it said, "Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived." These were homosexuals. I might go one step further and say homosexual militants. This is what this place had become. And Lot went out at the door unto them and shut the door after him and said, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Now that must have galled them, because I'm sure in their thinking they didn't think they were wicked. How many homosexuals today think they're wicked? Why, the political correctness today is that there's no such thing as wrong, and it's just another alternate lifestyle, and there isn't anything wrong with it. It's not wicked. Anybody who thinks it is judgmental. Lot said it was a wickedness. Behold, now I have two daughters which have not known man. Let me, I pray thee, I pray you, bring them out unto you, and do ye to them as is good in your eyes, only unto these men do nothing. For therefore came they under the shadow of my roof. Strange statement from a man who God regards as a righteous man, but I would view it from two vantage points. Number one, the commentators all believe that there was some kind of a badge of honor attached to having someone in your home, so that if any evil befell them, you were as guilty as a party. So you had a sacred duty, a bound duty to protect them. The other thing I would say is that Lot probably knew they weren't interested in his daughters, and he was just throwing that out with the idea in mind that it might placate them. They didn't have any interest in women. They only had interest in men. They said, stand back. And they said again, this one fellow came into sojourn, and he will now needs to be a judge. So whether or not he was some kind of an official, we don't know, but some commentators think that. Now we will deal worse with thee than with them. And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. But the men put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house to them and shut the door. And they smote the men at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. So here was the first miracle that occurred to Lot to make him realize that he was not dealing with ordinary men here. They smote this entire group with blindness, and they couldn't find their way around. So that ended that escapade. And the men said unto Lot, have you here any besides son-in-law and thy sons and thy daughters, and whatsoever thou hast in this city, bring them out of this place. Now let's notice a statement here in 2 Peter 2, verse number 7. Here Peter is writing about God's judgments. And he said he did not spare the angels that sinned. And he did not spare the old world. He destroyed that in the flood. And verse 6, turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly. And it still is a witness to this very day. But notice the next sentence. And delivered just Lot. So the Bible says, under the inspiration of God's Spirit, that Lot was a just man. We might ask the question, why was he dwelling in that evil place? Delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conduct of the wicked. I mean, this man was upset, continually upset by what he saw. For that righteous man dwelling among them and seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. So Lot was upset. He was greatly upset. I have, I think, a good idea as to why he was there and why he stayed there. I can only surmise from another text or two, but before we go to that, let's notice Jude 7. Again, we're reading here of God's judgments. And he said the angels, in verse 6, which kept not their first estate, or their principality, in other words, they broke away from the bonds that God had placed around them, but left their own habitation, he has reserved under lasting chains, under darkness, under the judgment of the great day, even as Sodom and Gomorrah. This is where we get the word today, sodomy. Comes from here. And the cities about them. So there were four that were destroyed outright. In like manner, and you see the word, the phrase here, giving themselves over to fornication. That's one word in the Greek. And the word actually means, it's an excessive form of the word. So it means either ultra fornication, or as some of the lexicons say, it means to go a whoring. That is to just give themselves completely over to whoredoms, one type or another. But it means just ultra fornication. I mean, they had lost all bonds of propriety and self-control and had just given themselves over to their lusts entirely. Notice what it even says here. And going after strange flesh. So they were indulging in bestiality. Homosexuality, bestiality, you name it. Whatever they could think of and do, this is what they were indulging in. They're set forth an example suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. It doesn't mean that the fire is still burning, but it means the effects of it were eternal, as they are to this very day. We might notice a statement here, because here we say these people were not knowledgeable, they didn't have any truth. Well, how does God view that? Let's notice what he says here in Romans, the first chapter. Because this is exactly what we're getting at here. Romans chapter 1, verse number 24. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed or exchanged the truth of God into the lie, and they worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. So what he's saying here is that they had enough of a testimony and a witness as to what was right and the proper thing to do, and there was more knowledge in that day, I think, than what people assume. We certainly find this in some of Abraham's experiences as he traveled around. The knowledge of God was far more extant than what we think may have been the case. And because of this very thing, where they had knowledge and understanding of God, he gave them up to vile affections. For even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature, and likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men. We might also say women with women. Working that which is unseemly, that which is unbecoming, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error, which was meet. So they received, as it says here, their just deserts for their activities and for their behavior. There's an example, a statement made by Jesus here in Luke, the 17th chapter. And this is how he summarized it. Luke 17. We can read here in verse number 27. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered in the ark and the flood came and destroyed them. Likewise, this is what we want to get at here, verse 28. Also, as it was in the day of Lot. They did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. They received their just rewards, their recompense. Now in Ezekiel, the 16th chapter, we have a brief statement here, I think, that sheds light on why Lot was there. Verse 48, Ezekiel 16. As I live, saith the Lord God, Sodom thy sister has not done she nor her daughter as you have done, you and your daughters. Talking to Jerusalem here. Behold, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. Pride. In other words, arrogance and vanity, where they couldn't be wrong. They could never admit they could be wrong in anything. This is what pride is. Pride is this vanity in human beings where they will not acknowledge their humanity. They're above any faults and sins. Fullness of bread. So she had everything. In other words, what we're looking at here are very abundant, successful, highly financial, successful societies. Rich and wealthy peoples. Abundance of idleness. It was such a prosperous land and such a prosperous area that they were so prosperous they hardly had to work. They had so much income and time on their hands to just while away with things that are bad. Was in her and in her daughters, neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy. They were self-centered and selfish, only trying to satisfy themselves. And they were haughty. They were puffed up. And they committed abomination before me. Therefore, I took them away as I saw good. Now, I think we can answer why Lot was there. It was a very prosperous, successful place, and he was there because of the business advantages. He probably had investments of one type or another, and he was probably in a position where he didn't feel he could just leave and give them up immediately. But in the end, he had to give up everything anyway. He'd have been better off if he would have just gotten away from that entire society. But for various reasons, he had this weakness. He stayed there. But in spite of the fact that he stayed there, God said he was a just man. So sometimes just men can get in bad circumstances and make mistakes too. So as we read here, the men said to Lot back in Genesis, the 19th chapter, "Have you here any besides son-in-law and your sons and your daughters and whatsoever you have in this city? Bring them out of this place." That's what that place was, a den of iniquity. "For we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxen great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it." And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters. And all the indication is here, these were betrothals. They had not yet consummated the marriages. They were betrothed to be married. And so, remember, under the terms of the old covenant, that was viewed upon legally as a marriage. "And said, Up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one of them that mocked unto his sons-in-law." They could not believe it. They found it to be incredulous. They couldn't accept it. Just like people today cannot accept divine revelation from God. If God comes and says something, they won't believe it. "And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, Arise, take your wife and your two daughters which are here, lest you be consumed in the iniquity of this city." You notice the marginal rendering, the punishment of this city. "And while he lingered, the men lay hold on his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful unto him." Well, Lot really didn't even want to go. Probably had too much investments there, too many investments. "And they brought him forth and sent him without the city. And it came to pass when they brought them forth abroad that he said, Escape for your life, look not back behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest you be consumed. And Lot said unto them, Oh, not so, my Lord." In other words, he didn't want to have it, to see it happen. "But behold now, thy servant has found grace in thy sight, and thou hast magnified thy mercy, which has showed unto me in saving my life, and then I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die. Behold now, this city is a near to flee unto, and it is a little one. Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one, and my soul shall live? And he said unto him, See, I have accepted thee concerning this thing also. I will not overthrow this city for which thou hast spoken." And this is Zoar. So this was probably the fifth city in this Pentapolis, the five cities. Not more than a few miles away. All of these cities were fairly close. So as we read here, "Haste thee, escape thither, for I cannot do anything till you be come thither." Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. the sun was risen upon the earth when Lot entered into Zoar, so it probably wasn't more than a few miles, and if they left around dawn, he would have been there still reasonably early in the morning. Now you find an interesting statement here. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and Gomorrah brimstone and fire. There's the tetragrammaton, the Lord. How did he rain fire and brimstone upon Sodom and Gomorrah? I think there's a logical answer to that. What is brimstone? It's sulfur. What happens if you have sulfur and you have a vast amount of sulfur and you throw it up in the air? And you just have a thick cloud of sulfur just floating around in the air. What happens if you strike a match to it? You know, every once in a while you read about a feed mill where men are inside the feed mill working and all of a sudden there will be a feed mill explosion. You wonder, how in the world can there be an explosion in a feed mill? It's exactly the same thing. The whole air in that feed mill gets saturated with these fine particles of dust. Somebody lights a cigarette or something, just explodes. That's what sulfur does. All God would have had to have done was to permeate the whole atmosphere with a sulfuric type of a very dense sulfuric air system and then send down a lightning bolt. The whole thing would have just blown up in a big explosion. So the Lord God rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire. And then notice the next statement. From the Lord out of heaven. The Lord rained upon Sodom from the Lord. That ought to tell you right there, there is not only a single God, there is a dual God. Because both of them can take the title and have assumed the title at times of the Yahweh, the ever-living one. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and all that which grew upon the ground. And so today it is believed that where that Dead Sea lies, a saltwater sea, so salty that hardly anything can live in it. There are some species of fish, I understand, that live in it, but very few, and it's a desolate area to this very day. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. Now that is bears a little bit of an explanation. You see, if you go back to Jesus' statement in Luke 17, verse number 32, we find what is leading up to the statement that Jesus made. Remember Lot's wife. He says here in verse 31, in that day, this is Luke 17, verse 31, he which shall be upon the housetop and his stuff in his house, let him not come down to take it away. And he that is in the field, let him likewise not return back. Remember Lot's wife. The implication is that when Lot's wife turned around, she had all due intention of returning. And she died. How did she die? The Bible doesn't state. Possibly she died from the noxious fumes because she didn't proceed on. Perhaps God himself struck her. We do not know. But the angel said, get away from there. Don't even look back. So in her desire to return, it cost her life. Now it says here she became a pillar of salt. Actually, what she became was a fossil of salt. She died. Her body probably just stayed there and eventually turned into a fossil of salt. Nobody knows where it is to this day, but people think at various times they have found it. And Abraham got up early in the morning to the place where he stood before the Lord, so he could actually view from where his view was. He could view the valley there and see what was going on. And he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain and beheld, and lo, the smoke of the country went up as a smoke of a furnace. That whole thing, that entire area was incinerated, was just virtually burnt up. It went up, as we read here, as the smoke of a furnace. And it came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow. So because of Abraham's righteousness and because Lot was a just man, God spared Lot and his family for that very reason. When he overthrew the cities in which Lot dwelt. Now, we might notice here, even though at a later time this law was cataloged, evidently it was in effect at a very, very early time. Otherwise, these men would not have been regarded in the sight of God as being sinners exceedingly. Let's go, first of all, to Leviticus 18. In Leviticus 18, verse number 22, you shall not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is an abomination. Homosexuality, God says, is an abomination. Notice also, because this is what Sodom and Gomorrah were guilty of, neither shall you lie down with any beast to defile yourself therewith, neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down thereunto. It is confusion. Or as a Moffat says, an unnatural crime. Notice Leviticus 20, verse number 13. If a man also lie with mankind, as he lieth with a woman, both of them have committed abomination, and abomination they shall surely be put to death. Homosexuality was a capital offense in the Old Testament period. And verse 15, if any man lie with a beast, he shall surely be put to death. Verse 16, and if a woman approach unto a beast and lie down thereunto, thou shalt kill the woman and the beast. They shall surely be put to death. But that's how God views these unnatural, what the Bible terms as unnatural sins. Now in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 29, verse number 23, here's a summary statement God is giving as a warning. He's telling his people, this is the same thing that's going to happen to you that happened to Sodom and Gomorrah. And that the whole land, Deuteronomy 29, verse 23, and that the whole land thereof is brimstone, sulfur. Sulfur and salt. And burning, that is not sown, nor beareth, nor any grass groweth therein. Like the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboiim, which the Lord overthrew in his anger and in his wrath. So you see, there's a summary statement of how God viewed that entire sinful situation and how he dealt with it and how he destroyed it. Now, people do have a tendency to forget. So it didn't take the Israelites long to forget. Because let's go to the book of Judges and notice what happened here. Before we get to the 19th chapter of the book of Judges, we want to notice something here in the 18th chapter. This will explain why a certain series of incidents took place a little bit later on. We read in chapter 18 of the book of Judges, in those days there was no king in Israel, and in those days the tribe of the Danites sought them an inheritance to dwell in. For unto that day all their inheritance had not fallen unto them among the tribes of Israel. Now I'm sure, are familiar with the story. They went out scouting. They found a likely land and a likely city that they could seize and take over. So they sent out their armed men. And in the process, they found a sort of a displaced priest. And they were practicing idolatry here because there was a certain man named Micah that hired this priest, and he had a series of idols there. And when the Danites came along and they saw this priest, they decided they wanted him, so they took him along and took along the idols, and they began to practice idolatry. Now, nobody did a thing about it, did they? You see, there was no king in Israel in those days. So they went up to Lachish. As we read, that was the name of the city that they took. Lachish, I should say. They set up idolatry. They set up this priest. And we read here in verse 27, they took the things which Micah had made and the priest which he had, verse 27, and they came to Lachish unto a people that were quiet and secure, and they smote them with the edge of the sword and burnt the city with fire, and there was no deliverer, because it was far from Zidon, and they had no business with any man, and it was in the valley that lieth in Beth-Rehob, and they built a city and dwelt therein, and they called the name of the city Dan, after the name of Dan their father. This is one of the proclivities of the tribe of Dan. You can trace them all throughout Europe and wherever they settled, and they named territories and cities after their own ancestor Dan. So we have Daneland, or Dan's land as it used to be called. We have the Danube River. All throughout Europe they can be traced. It was their proclivity to name things after their ancestor Dan. Nobody did a thing about this, did they? Chapter 19. Came to pass in those days when there was no king in Israel, there was a certain Levite sojourning in the side of Mount Ephraim, who took unto him a concubine of Bethlehem Judah, and his concubine played the whore against him and went away from him under her father's house in Bethlehem Judah, and was there 4 months. Well, he got over all of his rage and his wrath, and he decided he would like to have her back again. So her husband arose and went after her to speak friendly unto her, to bring her again, having his servant with him and a couple of asses, and she brought him unto her father's house, and when the father of the damsel saw him, he rejoiced to meet him. So she was eager to get back too, so you know, maybe they both had learned a good lesson. Now we have this long story here. I'm not going to go through the whole detailed thing here because I don't want to dwell on that particular aspect of it. We want to get to the other part here because this is what happened. But to make a long story short, her father-in-law wouldn't let him leave. And he kept delaying, and he planned on going, and he had him stay another day, and then he was going to leave later on that day, and he had him stay another day. And this just went on for several days in a row, it seems. So that the end of the story was, the timing was, that when he finally left, he only got far enough that evening to go to this particular city here, Gibeah, in the land of the Benjamites. So, we read here, this old man invited him into his home. He said, this is Judges 19, verse 20, peace be with thee, howsoever, let all thy wants lie upon the street, only lodge not in the street. So he brought him into his house and gave provender unto his asses, and they washed their feet and did eat and drink. Now we have a situation here that's almost similar to what happened in Sodom. Too bad those Israelites or these Benjamites here were not aware of the history. Now as they were making their heart merry, behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial. That word in the Hebrew language means without a yoke. That is, there are men who have no yoke to hold them back and restrain them. They're unrestrained is what it means. The world is full of them today. Sons of Belial beset the house round about and beat at the door and spake to the master of the house, the old man, saying, bring forth a man that came in into thine house that we may know him. Same thing that happened in Sodom. These were homosexuals. Actually, we can say they were even one thing more than that. They were bisexual. And the man, the master of the house, went out unto them and said unto them, nay, my brethren, nay, I pray thee, do not this so wickedly, seeing that this man is come unto mine house, do not this folly. Behold, here is my daughter, a maiden, and his concubine. Them will I bring out now, and humble ye them, and do with them what seems to you, but unto this man do not so vile a thing. But the men would not hearken to him. See, they wanted this Levite. So the man took his concubine and brought her forth, and they knew her. So they settled for the concubine. Perhaps the door was too big and heavy to break in, and they couldn't do it, so they ended up gang raping this concubine all night long. And they knew her and abused her all the night until the morning. And when the day began to spring, they let her go. Then came the woman in the dawning of the day and fell down, and as Adam Clark says, dead. She died from the shock of it. At the door of the man's house where her Lord was till it was light. I'd have to just say that this Levite, you can't say a whole lot in his favor either. But he probably figured, she was just nothing but a loose woman anyway, so why should I, if it's a push between a shove, it's going to be her and not me. That's probably the way he reasoned. Her Lord rose up in the morning and opened the doors of the house, and he went out to go his way, and behold, the woman, his concubine, was fallen down at the door of the house, and her hands were upon the threshold. And he said unto her, up and let us be going. But none answered. She was dead. Then the man took her upon an ass, and the man rose and gat him to his place. And when he was come to his house, he took a knife and laid hold on his concubine and divided her together with her bones into 12 pieces and sent her all to the coast of Israel. And it was so that all this sought said, there was no such deed done nor seen from the day that the children of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt unto this day. Consider, take advice, and speak your minds. Then all the children of Israel went out, and the congregation was gathered together as one man from Dan to Beersheba. This stirred them up. If they had been equally as stirred up over this idolatrous incident of the Danites, maybe they would have had a little bit better going here when the fight began to take place here. They didn't give a, they weren't the least bit perturbed about idolatry, but they were this. Both of them are bad in the sight of God. So they gathered from Dan to Beersheba with the land of Gilead unto the Lord in Mizpah. This is where the tabernacle was. And the chief of all the people, even all the tribes of Israel, presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 footmen that drew sword. That's almost 500,000 soldiers. Now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel had gone up to Mizpah. Then said the children of Israel, tell us, how was this wickedness? And the Levite, the husband of the woman that was slain, answered and said. Then he gives the whole story. You don't need to rehearse this. Let's go down to verse 12. And the tribes of Israel sent men throughout all the tribe of Benjamin, saying, what wickedness is this you've done among you? Now therefore deliver us the men, the children of Belial, which are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and put evil away from Israel. Now what should the Benjamites have done? Absolutely, turned them over immediately. You might ask the question today, why are all these do-gooder people standing up and taking up the cause for the homosexuals? They're just as misguided and misled as these Benjamites were. A false sense of loyalty is what it is. But the children of Benjamin would not hearken to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. This is what happens when people make foolish decisions. And then once they make a foolish decision, they can't back down and admit they're wrong and admit they made a mistake. Verse 15, the children of Benjamin were numbered at that time out of the cities 26,000 men that drew sword, besides the inhabitants of Gibeah, which were numbered 700 chosen men. And among all this people there were 700 chosen men left-handed. Every one could sling stones at a hair's breadth and not miss. Well, they were a dangerous bunch. You bet. You go back over 1,000 years of Viking history and you see what a bloody bunch they were. They terrorized Europe and the Mediterranean for 1,000 years. The Scandinavians did, the Vikings. You don't think there weren't Benjamites in that group? It wasn't until Christianity came on the scene that the Vikings finally began to be civilized. Well, I won't rehearse the whole story here. If you're interested in it, you can read it yourselves privately. But they asked the question, they asked God, who shall go up first? The Lord said, Judah shall go up first. Verse 18. Verse 21, and the children of Benjamin came forth out of Gibeon, destroyed down to the ground of the Israelites that day 22,000 men. Why did God let that happen? I can tell you why I let it happen. Because they were so lax and so careless on the matter of idolatry, he wasn't going to make it easy for them here. If they would have done the right thing on the matter of the Danite idolatry and would have stopped that, he would have given them a very quick victory here. And the men encouraged themselves, and they set their battle again to array in place. They wept before the Lord until even, as we read in verse 23, and they asked counsel of the Lord, saying, shall I go up to battle against the children of Benjamin and my brother? And the Lord said, go up against him. And the children of Israel came near against the children of Benjamin the second day, and Benjamin went forth against him out of Gibeah the second day and destroyed down to the ground of the children of Israel again 18,000 men. They knew how to fight. I tell you that for sure. And all the children of Israel came, and they went up, and they came to the house of God, and they wept and sat before the Lord and fasted that day till even. And then they asked Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before it in those days, saying, verse 28, shall I yet go up against and battle against the children of Benjamin, my brother, or shall I cease? And the Lord said, go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into your hand. Now you can read the account here. The Benjamites sallied out of the city once again, lined up. They thought they were going to have another great victory, but the Israelites had already planned a snare for them, and they set a trap. And so when they got out of the battle, they came in the city from the back way, unguarded, and they began to burn the city to the ground. And the Benjamites were already putting the Israelites in retreat because they were permitting themselves to retreat. Then when they looked back and they saw the city burning, then they knew they'd been had, and they were surrounded, and they were wiped out practically to a man. That whole city was destroyed. All the people that were in that tribe of Benjamin that allied themselves to that were destroyed, except 600 had escaped. That's how God views homosexuality. So you can see when we're reading about this particular incident here in the book of Judges was not necessarily a mighty act of God, because I'm just showing you the consequences of homosexuality and how God did back up the righteous tribes there, because they were certainly upset with that, and they had a right to be. The only problem was they weren't equally upset over idolatry of the Danites. So you see, when you go back here to the book of Genesis, the 18th chapter, this particular example here was done, as it says, as we read in the book of Jude, that it was an example to the ungodly to this very day. Now, we're living in a time period today when homosexuality is becoming rampant again, where militant homosexuality is rearing its head, where it is not politically correct to say anything critical against this manner of lifestyle. Well, I don't think we need to say a whole lot. I think God has said enough in His Word. We shall simply have to wait and see what the consequences of this lifestyle and what the consequences of this political rightness is going to eventually end up being, and what's going to happen to it.